Yeah, I guess a lot of work ahead in Munich. But what we've heard now, it's all the cost, the 30 million, it's all about for training the people and for really getting them used to, or most of it getting them used to the new software environment. So there's the question, if other peoples are going to migrate too, aren't there some economies of scales to reach with your kind of competence center to make this easier or to make it cheaper as well? Whoever wants to take it.
Well, economies of scale, I think we have migrated towards Open Office 2 with about 20 people, and we didn't have any training or any preparation, and all went well. So it also depends on the kind of people working with the software, how motivated they are in using the software, and it helps when you're a smaller organization, lines are smaller. I guess there will be economies of scale, of course. For instance, the training organizations, there are also now, all of them have programs for Microsoft. We've been doing some investigation how many training organizations can give training in Open Office, and there were three in the Netherlands. But they were very cheap, by the way, so in that way, there's also now there are advantages. Yeah, I suppose in the near future, when it keeps getting bigger, those kinds of people get even more cheaper. Mm. But yeah, economies of scale, I think the migration towards open source on a desktop will hurt always for any organization, as will a migration from Windows 2000 to XP hurt, because that hurts too. So, and I think we'll have to go through that.
Mm.
Sorry.
There are a few experiences in terms of economy of scale. Actually, if you have a large organization, you have the advantage that you probably have enough volume to justify a help desk. So it is probably harder to migrate, say, to Open Office, a small organization, than it is to migrate a large one, because in the small one you can't justify the expense. We have seen this in Argentina in the Revenue Service, that's an organization, a very large organization that moved towards Star Office way back then. Star Office 5.1, and they made they created a help desk for that, and it was actually very busy for about 3 weeks, and then it went away. Another organization that made a very large migration and did get something out of economies of scale is Metro de São Paulo. That's the subway in the Brazilian city of São Paulo. They have an unspoken number of computers, and they have they migrated them all over to Open Office. And what they did is they created a help desk in order to help the employees. And all of a sudden, they realized there was quite a market for such a help desk, also for other companies. So pretty soon they found out that although they're a subway company, they were selling help desk services to other companies in Sao Paulo, which was quite good.
So let's start help desks. What about the situation in yeah, we take questions from the audience right in a minute, but first maybe we have a chance to go to the German situation. We don't have a real government competence center here. I mean, what? We have a Linux trend store in Berlin, I know. Where is it? Yes, IBM and BSE are running. Yeah, for e-government. Yeah, but otherwise, I guess for the municipalities and for the communal stuff, there's nothing like that. So maybe Jens, you can comment on that.
I think we help ourselves. We will do the same, like in Sao Paulo, we will do these help desks and all that stuff. But the main point is that the people in these governments are frightened now in this situation. So we have to take time, and time costs money, to guard them to these new solutions. It's for them, it's nearly no change at all, because they have now a funny desktop with a Word program on it, and after the migration they have a funny desktop with Word on it. It's now called OpenOffice. But I think more than the half of the people don't want to use computers. They don't like these mouses and that stuff. And that's the problem. That could be for the people in these governments, it could be a very good thing to say, oh, I can't do it anymore, I can't do my work because the computer is not good enough with that new programs. So we have to teach them very good if they want to or not, if they need it or not, because it's important for the process. And Munich have to do have to get a very good process, as I told you.
Okay, we just take questions from the audience now. So if you have any question, please go to the microphones here, and we start here with one.
Michael Thiemann from Red Hat. When I hear the term economies of scale in this context, it makes me think of two polar opposites. One so-called economy of scale is to take a whole bunch of black boxes that never really worked together before and try to define them into an even larger black box. And somehow the size of the big, big, big black box is going to be the magic delivery of the economies of scale. And that is the Microsoft way, which is documented so brilliantly in a book called Breaking Windows, which I recommend. Lawrence Lessig recommended it to me 3 years ago. It's a great book. I've slept well ever since. The second definition of economies of scale that we must remember in the open source community is the economies of modularity. And in thinking about the opportunity with so many states now in Europe, there's an opportunity to do something remarkable, which is to not pool resources, but instead create several collaborative, independent, interoperable projects. And a model of this is the Sakai project, which is a number of universities around the world, each choosing a different part of the problem of bringing education to the 21st century. So class scheduling, curriculum development, student performance reviews, logistical management, accessibility of information to variously handicapped people. These are all independent projects which are all being coordinated through the Sakai project, and each different university is taking a different piece, similar to what Apache did. It's my belief that the true economy of scale, which is the opportunity certainly in Europe, I don't know about the US because all of our states have such different laws, but in Europe, what I could imagine is that by each party, each state taking a different part of this common problem, those economies will be far better than any one unified Esprit project could possibly deliver. Just a suggestion.
Okay, thank you for the comment. Yeah, we have another question from the audience.
Yeah, Kurt Gramlich, Skole Linux. I want to say that in North Rhine-Westphalia, Mönchengladbach, the city, has offered for all other cities from North Rhine-Westphalia to join the migration and to give all the special programs they use in the city under the GPL for all other cities in North Rhine-Westphalia. So there's no problem if Munich, and there must be other cities in Bayern also, to cooperate and to solve these problems.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe another economy of scale that can be reached is, since you're going to train, because it's really training, you know, it's not such a big thing. You're not going to have to educate these people or something like that. It's just showing them where the buttons are, pretty much. You can actually make better leverage of that and not limit it to just the municipality, but also offer training for teachers and offer training at schools. And that's something that will come back to you, because you will have better support, better local support, and it will be much more widespread, which is what the people in Extremadura have found, that now everybody is using Linux, and hey, there's no question about availability of people who can use the system. Start throwing CDs out of planes. Have everybody install GNU Linux on the systems.
Okay, we go to the other side.
Thank you. My name is Jamie Love. I work in Washington, D.C. For a group called CPTech. And Ralph Nader and myself were engaged in negotiations with Mitch Daniels when he was the director of the Office of Management and Budget about procurement issues, about software. And it was our position that at the client end that it was difficult to force users to switch from Microsoft because they were accustomed to the applications they worked in, and that even though, you know, we thought it was possible, we thought it would be a difficult thing. However, we thought that the strategic issue was the file formats, and so what we asked the U.S. government to do was to require in their procurement policy that the file formats at which data was stored in, would their default file format would be based on an open industry standard. It was a very narrow and, we thought, a strategic way to get the procurement issue. And in this discussion, some of his own IT staff said that he thought that Windows was like, I mean, the Microsoft Office was a monopoly, like PowerPoint and Word. And we said it wasn't. And the argument we said was that for web pages where you have an open standard for file formats, which is HTML, there's no monopoly on authoring tools. I mean, everyone I know uses a different authoring tool for web pages. But for word processing, there's this monopoly. And it was because people wanted to make sure that they could read the documents and share documents with other people. It was a file format issue. And Daniels was very close, actually, to moving on this before he left OMB to run for governor, which was unfortunate. He started in process of review, and subsequently, not only he left, but the director of procurement left, and the IT director left, so we have to start all over again. But I think that it's at the client space, I think the resistance from the user is very strong to shipping, switching to Linux, but I think the strategic way to approach it is to get people to focus on the procurement level, at the EU level, at big government level, at big, economies of scale level in terms of users, to force Microsoft to sell them a unit, a word processing that saves the data in these standardized formats. And that's something that if Microsoft didn't do, somebody else like WordPerfect or OpenOffice or some other vendor would be. What's sort of important in a way is to make the platform competitive, just like in the authoring tools for web pages. It's not important whether the authoring tools are open source or private source. What's important is it's not a monopoly, and you really have choice and innovation on the authoring tools for HTML thing, and the data's not locked in. Thank you.
Okay, now we get a lot of suggestions, I guess, and no real questions, or was there a real question?
I'm sort of suggesting that the strategy, it, to be somewhat productive, is a little misplaced in the client space to push people to Linux as the first step. And I think it meets a lot of resistance from users. I think, isn't it better in the client space to push people to solve this problem of the data standards, which actually makes people freer to choose other platforms, including the operating system, but also other applications?
Okay, thank you. Another comment or a question?
No, really a question. I like to hear, how is the situation in schools in your countries? Are they using Linux? Are they using OpenOffice or what are they using in your countries? And especially in München.
Especially in?
In Munich. No, for all of you. It's a question for all of you.
Okay, the schools in Munich. I think we have done a wrong decision in the about 3 weeks ago, because we decided to let it be on Microsoft for another 2 years. The reason is that the municipal office for data processing has no power now to migrate the schools to Linux, and they said to us there are no teaching programs, no school programs. I've seen downstairs there are solutions for the schools too, but they have no licenses from Microsoft. They are running with support for another 2 years, so the time to migrate the school software is in about 2006 in Munich, because if you have done an investment, if you bought licenses a few years ago and you have support on it, it's no reason to change. You have the reason to change for a city if there is the support is ending, and that's with Windows 2000 in about 2 years in Munich.
Shall I go? Okay. In Argentina, we have schools that are using free software, but there are few of them. And right now, our Ministry of Education is embarked in a plan to they have reserved $52 million. They don't have to buy 50,000 computers, 2.6 gigahertz, 512 megabyte RAM, 80 gigabyte disk, DVDs and CD read writers on all of them, which are particularly useful at schools which don't even have electricity in some cases. And they have decided to equip them with Windows. And this is a very thorny issue. The point is that in schools in most Latin American countries, computers are being used for, not for education, but for training. I would go as far as to say that they're being used for indoctrination. They are used, the labs are not being used to teach geography or history or programming, but kids learn how to use Word or Excel, which is as stupid as if you would, as if at school you had some signature for Blackboard or something. I mean, you use tools, you don't learn them. This is probably due to the fact that these policies are decided by old people who stand before computers as some mystical things they don't understand, and they think that kids must have the same impression they have. But anybody who has seen a kid interact with a computer will know that you don't need to teach kids how to use computers. The hard thing is to prevent them from doing so. So this is really a really misguided policy, but I guess we will have to wait until all our education ministers and probably school directors die out until we have a sensible policy for computers at school.
Okay, thanks. Let's have a look.
It's mostly Microsoft, and it's a bit of an awkward situation. Way you see it, there are really cheap rates for schools using Microsoft licenses. I believe schools paying 4 or 5 euros for an enterprise license, as you will. So if you want to what we talked about earlier, the TCO of open source compared to proprietary software in schools, but also on high schools and universities, is very hard to handle. So what you now see is that the success of open source, and that's not only in schools but in all organizations, I guess, is dependent of some individuals who have guts and who have knowledge and brains and who are supported by their management. They can do a lot and they can implement a lot of free source software, where in the other organizations where just the same teachers like you told, well, there's not a lot happening right now.
So how hard is it to beat Microsoft in the classroom in Bulgaria?
I believe I mentioned something about the situation with the schools where they don't have computers, but they buy software for eventually the computers. But I'll tell you, now, this sounds like a joke, but I can publish you, I mean send you, if you don't trust me, a gift, a scanned picture of the magazine, which was published last year. It's like the Bulgarian Time magazine, same well-respected as the US or Music or whatever. And there was an interview with the Minister of Education at this time. By the way, when we filed this case, we also sent a letter to the Prime Minister complaining about him, and he was fired like a month later. Maybe we contributed, maybe it was not enough, but we contributed. So in this interview, he said the following. Now, the journalist asked him, what would you say about the Internet Society accusations that you buy software but you don't have the computers? And he answers, and I quote, well, with a suitable journalist, anyone can make a news about anything. But the good farmer, the good farmer in the village, if he wants to raise chickens, he would buy chicken nests not only for one chicken, but for six chickens. Even if he has one chicken at the moment, he will eventually get eggs and there will be more chickens, so these nests will be used. This is not funny. It's not over yet. There is more. So he says, we in the Ministry of Education, people think that when we say 35,000 licenses, that means we have to have 35,000 computers. That's not the case. We first have to get the software. The computers will eventually come. And we asked in this letter to the Prime Minister, we sent this letter and we quoted this interview. We actually also quoted it in the letter to the Chief Prosecutor, and we said, you know, this is a very good example of the way the minister thinks. Now, we have a question here, again, concerning these farms, this agricultural or whatever you call that issue. When you have a chicken and six nests, and imagine that the chicken brings up every day eggs. Now, in order to have more chicken, like little chickens, you need to have a male cock, whatever you call that chicken. So who in this case is the male? Is this Microsoft who is kind of taking it all on us? I'm telling you, this is the serious issue is the calculation shows that if they haven't spent the money for licenses, they could have bought two computer labs for every school in Bulgaria. At the moment, more than half of the schools don't have at all computers. We are not talking about whether they will be with Windows or with Linux. We're talking that there are no computers. And in the 21st century, just 2 years ago in this city, there was a conference called 21st Century Literacy Summit with Schroeder and Jose Maria Aznar and what was the name of this guy, AOL chief, Steve Case, yeah. And Madeleine Albright, excuse me, and a number of other people. And there was a talk about, you know, how in the 21st century, if you don't know to work with computers, you are actually illiterate. I think this is what's happening in Bulgaria and in many other countries where big international organizations like Microsoft, the Business Software Alliance, they come and they actually press the government, either they bribe it or they press and say, we'll include you in the 301 list, blacklist of the countries that are being watched by the US government. You know, you'll be having a lot of problems. By the way, Bulgaria has paid altogether since 1999 more than $20 million for software. And if you look at the BSA annual reports, you will see that every year Bulgaria has piracy software equal of $10 million. Now, I cannot make this calculation. I mean, even with the latest deal for $13.6 million, the next year review of BSA, it still shows $10 million negative, like pirated software. That's not possible. I mean, if you buy 13.6 and you have had 10 million illegal software, then next year you should have 3.6 positive software.
More expensive, you know?
Anyway, so this is the answer to your question. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
I would like to point out something to what Mark said about the total cost of ownership of side of using free software on schools. And it is true that Microsoft is offering their software for schools at much lower prices than they offer it on the market. But this is one issue where it is very well illustrated how TCO fails, how TCO is the wrong strategy. Because TCO only measures how much it costs to do something without asking the very fundamental question, which is, do I want to do this? In fact, bringing proprietary software to schools is something you don't want to do. Because then, when your children want to learn how the software they use works, the school will have to report the student and prevent the student from acquiring knowledge, which is not the fundamental role of school, at least not the last time I looked. Yeah. So, as a matter of fact, looking into TCO in this particular issue, is looking at it the wrong way. You should first think, what do I want to do? And then you will find out that even if they pay you for it, it's bad business.
Yeah, we have another question.
Just two comments. First one, if you get Microsoft for pupils, even if you get it free, the parents has to pay at home to use PowerPoint and such things. So that's still in Germany. It's normal that the teacher wants that the pupil use PowerPoint at home. So on the second one is, if you look at the costs, there's a study from the Norwegian government where the Skole Linux is coming from. It started there 2 years ago. And they found out every school has a budget. They can do with this money what they want. And they calculated the normal school in Norway. They can have software for proprietary software and use it, or they can pay two teachers. So this is the alternative for Norway.
Teachers or software?
I just wanted to comment on the PowerPoint thing which you raised. There is a saying which I believe probably is copyrighted by Vinsurf, but we can always use it in such cases, and this is very adequate to the Microsoft issue. It says, power corrupts, and PowerPoint corrupts absolutely.
Yeah, if we don't, do we have another question, or? Oh, one. This is the last question we take.
Okay. My opinion is that governments or federally allocated software must be free software. What's your opinion on the panel?
Well, the question maybe is if there should be a law or if it should be mandatory?
It's for a government who has taxes by the citizen paid, it's a question about where to spend the money on. And I think it should be free software. It should be under the GPL or the BSD license, but everyone should reuse it later. And the governments should reuse it later for more sustainability.
You mean for software that is developed by the public administration?
Yeah.
Not off-the-shelf software.
What?
You mean you make the distinction between customized software and off-the-shelf software, or all?
No, only the software which is developed by funding of the government.
Well, I think software developed with taxpayers' money should be free. That's very simple. I'm saying that as a taxpayer, so.
And there is another argument in favor of that. If you use free and open source software for the government needs or for any type of needs, I think from the perspective of a developing country, the most important issue is that the money remains in the country. You can use it for payments of salaries or for buying hardware or software or whatever you want, but they stay in the country. And if you buy software from Microsoft, then by default it goes to the US. I mean, with all my respect to the US, I kind of feel awkward to know that Bulgarian citizens have invested each of us like $4 in the US economy. It doesn't make sense. It should be the opposite.
Okay, I guess we should close the session now. I mean, we have more questions, but maybe we can discuss them in a more private environment. We maybe should talk about IBM now become the next monopoly or whatever, but maybe we leave this for another session. And so I would all like to thank you for your attention and for being with us almost half of the night. And thank you very much for the speakers here, and see you tomorrow morning or so.